But thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I appreciate the work of this historic club. All of you are community leaders and servants, and it's also a delight to be in this incredible historic room as well. Last Thursday morning on I-69, a tank truck burst into flames. It created a tower of fire so high that it lit the overpass above it, a cell tower thousands of feet in the air, billboards on either side, and the poor gentleman riding behind that tank truck was engulfed in that inferno and was taken to Wishart Health Services Burn Center, the largest burn center in Indiana and the only one in central Indiana. Also last Thursday night, about 12 hours later, the main steam pipe that provides heat and hot water to Wishart Hospital unexpectedly burst, causing us to have to cancel all 15 surgeries scheduled for that day. Now, fortunately, it was a 65 degrees day outside. Had that happened in the dead of winter, we would have had to evacuate the hospital. Just a few months ago, Indianapolis police officer Jason Fishburne was chasing a fleeing felon over here in Irvington. Officer Fishburne came around a blind corner. Waiting for him was that felon with his gun drawn, who pulled the trigger and shot Officer Fishburne in the chest. Now, Officer Fishburne was wearing a bulletproof vest, and Officer Fishburne went down. And then that felon bent down, put his gun against Officer Fishburne's temple, pulled the trigger, and put a bullet through his brain. Now, the Wishart EMTs arrived on the scene within minutes. They were friends of Officer Fishburne. They worked with him every day. They had been fishing with him just the weekend before. They stabilized, and they brought him to the Wishart Level 1 Trauma Center. Within minutes, Officer Fishburne was in the operating rooms where the IU School of Medicine neurosurgeons and trauma surgeons were waiting for him. Those surgeons drilled a hole through his brain, removed a portion of his cranium, picked out the bullet fragments, reconnected neurotissue, reduced the swelling, and 3 weeks later, Officer Fishburne walked out of Wishart Hospital and is back on the force today and has asked us to be the chair of Citizens for Wishart. And what is perhaps the strangest irony, next Tuesday, November 3rd, the day of this referendum, is the opening day of the trial for the person accused of shooting Officer Fishburne. Now, I mention this because Wishart has been in this community for 150 years. Our mission is to provide care to the indigent, to underserved, to provide highly specialized trauma care and burn care, to be a venue for teaching and research and education. And we'd like to think that we've done that pretty well with the enormous support of so many. But right now, all of that is at risk because we are in aging and crumbling buildings that are beyond the point that they can be repaired. And so we have proposed to build a new Wishart to replace those old buildings. Here we are right now. In fact, I brought this. I know that the light is dark. But this is Wishart right here. Wishart consists of 17 different buildings, no two of which have the same floor height. The oldest building of which we're providing care, it's true. It's like a skateboarding ramp when you go in there. You can go up and down each time you move. This building right here was built in 1914. That's the oldest building there. We provide care in that building. This building right here was built in the early 20s. That's where our outpatient surgeries are provided. This is where our main operating rooms are in this building, which was built in the early 1940s. And our major mechanical and electrical systems are failing right now. They're failing on a daily basis. And what our professionals have advised us is those systems will fail completely and inevitably. And when they happen, because our buildings are so old, we lack the interstitial space to replace those systems with modern mechanical and electrical systems. And that is why We do not have the choice of merely continuing to renovate, and we have proposed to build a new Wishart Hospital, and we can do it right now without any increase in any kinds of taxes whatsoever. And here's how much this is going to cost, and here's how much we're going to pay for it. My guess is we're going to get some more questions about that in a couple minutes. But let me just give you the outlines, and then we'll go into it more detail. The project is about $754 million. We have already put aside in cash $150 million that we will use as a down payment. In other words, a 20% down payment. In fact, I'd like to suggest that there has never been a public project in the history of this city where we have saved already $150 million in cash, 20% down. And then we will issue general obligation bonds. We'll issue the smallest number, the smallest amount that we can possibly issue. It'll probably be about $604, $605 million. We have the opportunity right now to issue something called Build America bonds, which are part of the federal economic stimulus package. They're these special below-interest rate bonds. Right now, they're running at 3.91%. If you can believe it, any bankers in the room, they're running at 3.91%. It's incredible. So the debt service will be about $38 million a year. We have more than enough revenues to cover that $38 million a year. In fact, that consists of 4.25% of our total budget. The Wishart budget in 2010 is $894 million. $38 million a year is 4.25% of that budget. And so we have the ability to do this right now as a community. But we need to seek the permission of the community, and that's what happens next Tuesday at the referendum. Now, I want to be honest, state law prohibits me from, on company time, which I am right now, from encouraging people to vote one way or the other, and so I will not do that. That would be wrong. But there is an election, and the only way this project can be done is if a majority of the voters of Marion County give us the permission to do this. Now, we have a speakers bureau, and we've now conducted over 200 community meetings, public hearings, small group meetings, interviews with the media, and it's been an incredible, incredible project, and we've been asked incredibly difficult questions, really hard questions, always in good cheer. Well, that's a lie. They're not always in good cheer. Some of them have not been. But we've asked wonderful questions. And here, let me tell you the result of that. And that is this incredibly overwhelming, deep and broad support for the community for this project. So, for example, the five living mayors of Indianapolis all are endorsing this project. Mayor Ballard, Peterson, Lugar, Hudnut, and Goldsmith all are in favor of this. The Greater Indianapolis Progress Committee, the State Chamber of Commerce, the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, the police chief, the fire chief, the prosecutor Carl Brizzi, Scott Newman, a broad alliance of the faith-based community. It's just been this incredible, overwhelming degree of support for this project, and it has amazed us and overwhelmed us. Now, they've only given me, how much time do I have? I'm going to take one more minute, which is this. Let me tell you the most common question that we've been asked as we've done these 200 presentations, and that is this. Why would we do this project now, when the economy is bad, when people are uncertain about their future, when their stock portfolios are low? It's a big project, an expensive project. Why would you do it now? And the answer to that is there is no better time than right now. That right now, interest rates are at historic lows. We have the ability to use these Build America bonds where the federal government will be giving us $120 million to help us with this. Commodities prices are low. Service fees are low. Wage rates are low. And right now is when the community needs the jobs. At the height of this construction project, we'll be employing about 4,400 people on that job site. And over the whole life of the project, we'll need about 13,000 different individuals. And these, of course, are good-paying jobs. So this project will never be less expensive than right now. It'll never be cost-effective. In fact, if we were to wait until the economy improves and interest rates were to return to their historic norms, this project would cost $360 million more than it costs today. So now is the absolute perfect time to do something that I believe this community can be enormously proud of. that Indianapolis is rightly proud of having a Wishart Hospital. The fact that we have had a Wishart Hospital for 150 years says something, I believe, about the morality, the goodness, the decency, the compassion, the kindness, the humanity of our city. And I am highly optimistic that Wishart will be here for the next 150 years as well. But that will only happen if there's a certain result that I cannot discuss one way or the other next Tuesday. So with that, I would love to entertain the questions of our good panel.
Thanks for leaving us a little time, Matt. And as you point out, Wishart is 150 years old, and I'm sure you hope that this new hospital would serve the community for another 150 years at least. Now, I, as part of the Star, have written about Wishart for 4 years, have profiled you and Dr. Harrison, written articles about this. Yet, the whole process of deciding on a $754 million new hospital has been condensed down into a very few short months. It came out of the budget in late June, in a very obscure way. Matt has the exact page number, but like 500, you know, and then it comes in a political year, which is expected to be very low turnout, no candidate races. And you yourself have painted in interviews with me and with others the dilemma in the starkest of terms. It's really very black and white, either build or essentially close up in a while. Do you feel like that's been a fair approach? I mean, as far as I've heard from people say, why can't we explore other issues, whether it be more joint agreements with other, we have lots and lots of hospitals in this community. What about rebuilding, remodeling in pieces? I know that you found that to be. So I was just wondering if you feel like your approach has allowed for the political discourse that democracies really need to make good, sound decisions by the voting public.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. First of all, we have been discussing this project as a community for years now. It was 2 years ago, in fact, a little bit over 2 years ago, at a city-county council meeting when we began openly discussing this project and describing that we are in the planning process for our facilities, describing that we needed to address those facilities, and discussing that we were engaging in a kind of comprehensive analysis. That was 2 years ago. Last year, before the City County Council, we had the same discussion as well. In fact, at that time, it was a much more elaborate discussion about the options that we were discussing, the process, and the fact that we needed to address this issue. We've also been meeting, I think, exactly the way the political process is supposed to work, which is we've been spending a lot of time with elected officials on both the federal level, the state level, and the local level, discussing this project for really a couple of years, and I think that process has worked well. What I think has been inaccurate is to say that this only came through the budget bill at the special session. We actually were seeking legislation in a number of bills during the ordinary session that died. You know, they died on the cutting room floor of the General Assembly when so many other things did. And so that's why we needed, and of course there was a special session which made the process last longer. Now, you also raised the issue of, is it fair to have this vote during a low turnout year? I don't think that's good for us. I think that's bad for us to be in a low voter turnout year. History would suggest that that's bad for us. That since the General Assembly 2 years ago passed a law that requires us to go to a referendum, there have been 9 referenda in the state of Indiana. Two have succeeded, only 9 have failed. Let me get the math right. 9 have occurred, 2 have succeeded, 7 have failed. The only 2 to succeed were those last November during the presidential election where there was record turnout. Every other referenda in the state of Indiana that has not been on that time frame have failed. Okay, so it is not a great benefit to us to be in this off year. There will be very low turnout. That means that a very small number of people will decide this very important public policy issue rather than a larger number of people. And what both political scientists as well as psychologists will tell you is that people who are against something are more motivated than people who are for it. And so we're walking an uphill battle here. If we win this, we will be the first referendum since the General Assembly passed the law to not win in a presidential election.
I'm the numbers guy, so I'll have to read my numbers. 9 minus 2 is 7. Good
Thank
job.
Thank you. Yes. This is why I went to law school, actually. This is why I did not go to medical school. Right.
I had to say that for Denny Sponsel's benefit, though.
Right. Right.
You mentioned that there will be no tax increase. However, that fails to appreciate that when you took over as the head of the Health and Hospital Corporation of Marion County, the HHC received a subsidy from the taxpayer of $88 million. In the budget that was approved last month, for this coming year, the taxpayers are going to contribute $108 million to your operating budget.
Those aren't property taxes.
They're taxes.
Right, those are not property taxes.
Understood, they're
right.
Taxes.
Right.
So, and in the literature that you hand out, you say no tax increases, yet the HHC has received a $20 million increase from the taxpayers in the last few years. Given the tightening of budgets that everybody is having to go through in the state, wouldn't you agree that the HHC should not take more tax dollars as they have in the past, but maybe contribute something back to the taxpayers?
Well, we've done that, actually. Actually, our property taxes have gone down every year, or at least frozen, since 2002. Now, that's a highly confusing the way our budget, but 2002 was the high water mark for Health and Hospital for property taxes. Every year since 2002, we have either frozen property taxes or lowered them, and actually they've been lowered relatively dramatically. Now, let me tell you, though, what we do with those property taxes, and I'd like to think that we get a pretty good deal with those property taxes. We use our local property taxes to leverage federal dollars, and you do that through the Medicaid money, but you have to have local dollars to bring in those federal dollars, and right now that leveraging opportunity is for every $1 of local money, we can bring in $4 of federal money. And so if you were to lower our taxes by $1, we would actually be forfeiting $4 of federal money. And so it is both, there's a great upside for the return on investment of those local property taxes by allowing us to leverage that into federal funds, but also a huge deficit if you take those monies away. Now, the single biggest increase in those taxes are that you've seen there are ones that we didn't ask for, and that was the what's called the local option income tax, the LOIT tax. Okay, that was a tax that that the General Assembly enacted, and then the City County Council acted. We had nothing to do with that whatsoever, and that's you know, about $8 million of that, and that's just money that we get. But the bottom line is, Dr. Will, is that we are not seeking any new taxes whatsoever for this project. We're not seeking any property taxes, sale taxes, LOIT taxes, food and beverage taxes, hotel taxes, rental car taxes, Rotary Club taxes, Scottish Rite Cathedral taxes, you name it. We are not seeking any new taxes for this project. We can do it based upon the revenues that we generate as an organization. We generate over $800 million as an organization, and that distinguishes us from other entities that have built big projects in this community. So, for example, people I think are rightly concerned about the library, which had to have some new taxes, or Lucas Oil Stadium. Those are entities that do not generate the kinds of revenues that we generate. In fact, those entities, in order to meet their capital needs, had to do it 100% by some forms of taxes. That's not us. We generate revenues, and we can meet our capital needs based upon those revenues that we generate by providing services.
Now, anyone who's taken a drive around 465 when it's open or out into the suburbs has seen huge cranes attached to new hospital projects, Community North, Clarion North, St. Francis. As you planned this project, did Health and Hospital Corp engage in specific talks about options of sharing the indigent load? The STAR did a major investigative package within the last year, identifying several of the local hospitals that did very, very low levels of charity care, uncompensated care, yet received millions in tax breaks, both at the local, federal level, state level. Was there any talk about how to spread that around, that we probably already have many of the resources in place? Certainly Clarion has natural tie-ins with Wishard through the IU School of Medicine. Was every avenue pursued in this?
Sure, absolutely. No, we had very long, detailed, specific discussions with other hospital systems about whether we could meet this need in a more cost-effective, more prudent, and safer, higher-quality way than continuing to exist. And the results of those conversations were that Wishard providing services was absolutely the most cost-effective and prudent way to meet the healthcare needs of the community. Now, you are correct that there have been other hospitals engaged in good building in this community. We have fantastic hospitals in this community. Every hospital in this community is a terrific hospital. But underlying your question, Daniel, is the assumption that the other hospitals have the capacity to take our patients. And that is not remotely the case. We do have great hospitals, but those other hospitals couldn't possibly absorb the fact that our over 150,000 emergency department visits a year, our 1.2 million outpatient visits a year. We are one of only two level one trauma centers in the entire state of Indiana. There's not the trauma capacity in the city to take that. We are the only psychiatric emergency department, the only burn center. In other words, when you look at our patients, there is not anywhere near the kind of capacity for those other hospitals to absorb those patients. But perhaps even more importantly, there are highly practical considerations of why it doesn't make sense for patients to go up to St. Vincent's or St. Francis. Namely, if a patient sitting in Fountain Square wants to use Clarion North, it's an impossibility. That patient in Fountain Square has no way to get there. So in other words, even if Clarion North had capacity and begged and pleaded for that patient in Fountain Square to come up there, that patient does not have the ability to get there. In fact, we put all of our patients at Wishard on a GIS map and located the epicenter of those patients. And it turns out that the epicenter is where Wishard Hospital is today, the IUPUI campus. And so the fact that there may even be some limited capacity out on 86th Street or out on 116th Street or down in Southport, that does nothing to help the patients in the core of the city that have transportation concerns, that have job concerns, that have social circumstances that do not permit them to have the mobility or the time or the luxury of going to 86th Street or 116th Street.
You mentioned in your answer previously that you have plenty of revenue to cover these bonds. In the budget that was approved by the City County Council last month, you had $200.2 million of revenue next year coming from intergovernmental sources. According to the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, the current Senate health care bill that Senator Baucus is proposing, which is the leading bill, includes $404 billion of savings from cuts in Medicaid and Medicare. How can you be sure that those cuts won't impact the $200 million you get from intergovernmental sources?
Oh, I think that they will have an impact, but that's something we deal with every day. Every healthcare, every business deals with that every day, that you have some revenue sources that go down, other revenue sources go up, some revenues fluctuate one way, some fluctuate the other, and that's an environment that we have been dealing with for the entire history of Health and Hospital Corporation, Wishard, and we'll deal with that in the future. What we do know is that we have diversified our revenue sources, and so we are not overly dependent on any one revenue source. And so that ought to give us some great comfort. Secondly, what we know is that the type of hospital that we are, a safety net hospital that provides the majority of indigent care that's provided in Marion County, in the largest safety net hospital system in the state, one of the largest in the country, that when those cuts come for indigent patients, we are the last people to get those cuts. We're not the first people to get those cuts. And those are programs that exist so that public hospitals, safety net hospitals, can continue to stay alive. And so, first of all, those kinds of cuts that are in the Baucus bill will be phased in. In fact, they don't actually even start coming until about right now in that bill, 2017, and finally sort of phase in 2024. So sort of a long lead time. They have some triggers associated with them. Those triggers match that more people that are currently uninsured would get insurance, there'd be less of a need for some of those safety net payments. I mean, there's a whole series of specifics. But all that's to say is that we are prepared for the kinds of ordinary fluctuations that occur all the time with those funding sources, and we're going to be just fine.
Should the yes votes succeed on Tuesday, Marion County taxpayers would be the financial backstop. Should everything go according to your plan, it will not cost them more in property taxes, but if things were not, they would be the ones where the buck would stop. Yet Wishard, while it's part of a Marion County entity, provides real and tangible benefits statewide and certainly in central Indiana. You mentioned the trauma center and the burn center. Certainly those see patients every day from outside Marion County. It's a major teaching hospital for the state's only medical school, IU. That medical school, through Wishard, through medical students, residencies, fellows, trains the majority of the state's physicians. Should, as an approach maybe they've done with some other public projects, should it not have been structured in a way that maybe people in Hamilton County or Hancock County or other places, maybe even a smaller share of the backstop, but to kind of spread around the risk?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a question that's come up on a number of occasions. Let me answer that in a couple ways. First of all, the vast majority of patients that we see are Marion County patients. It's a very small number of patients overall, even though it sometimes can be very important. It's a very small number of patients that come from out of the county. And the patients that we do see from out of the county generate revenue for us. In other words, those are principally trauma patients, and so they come by helicopter to our level 1 trauma center, and those are patients that by and large have a revenue source associated with them. So those are typically patients that came from an auto accident or an industrial accident or have workers' compensation. So we actually generate revenues from those out of county patients. And so we wouldn't want to jeopardize that by only seeing Marion County patients. Second, we do already receive enormous amounts of support from the federal government and the state government. So property taxes right now comprise 5.4% of our budget. Okay, it's a very small, in fact, next year it's gonna be 5.1% of our budget. We are at $894 million corporation, and in property taxes that actually come to Wishard, it's about $24.9 million. So it's a very small amount. So the level of risk that the property taxes payers are taking in Marion County is a very small level of risk. And so I don't think it at all is disproportionate to the amount of benefit that the county receives from Wishard. In fact, we receive about $24.9 million in property taxes. We in turn generate, directly and indirectly, $154 million in taxes that go to support public entities. We generate $719 million in wages, and all told generate $1.2 billion in economic development activity. So we are a significant net contributor overall to the economy. So the level of risk, which I would like to suggest is extremely de minimis, is more than offset not only by the quality of health care that's provided, but also the economic engine that we are in terms of both dollars and jobs, as well as the teaching, research, and education that also contributes significantly to the economic development of our community. In fact, much of our economic future has rested on the life sciences initiative, the ability to attract and retain the greatest and the brightest minds into this community, and then in turn generate the kinds of translational research that occurs through life sciences. Wishard is a central part of that. Without Wishard, we would not have a life sciences initiative. So the returns for this important but relatively modest investment that the Marion County taxpayers are making, I think, are well worth it, and certainly well worth the diminishment risk that I think the taxpayers are taking.
Due to time, this will have to be the last question. And I feel bad you didn't say my question was great, only Daniel's. So.
No, it was even better than Daniel's, actually.
That's okay. Just a factual statement and then a question.
He was standing up and it was kind of intimidating to me, so I felt like I had to, compliment him.
You mentioned only 5% of your budget. The truth is, while that's property taxes,
yes,
in your June 2009 minutes of your board meeting, they mentioned that 41% of your city-county budget is from tax revenues. That's from the minutes of your meeting. So actually, to say property taxes are 5, total taxes provide 5/12 of your budget come from tax revenue sources.
Can you say that again? Because that's not correct.
From the June 2009 board minutes, it states that 5/12 of the $294 million approved by the City County Council come from tax sources. I'll give you the minutes of your meeting in a minute.
Yeah. No, our total budget is $894.
That was going to get to my question. The City County Council approved $294 million of budget. Your total revenue sources are $848 million. There's a significant part that is not attached to the taxpayer. Why don't you shift your operations to that side of the equation?
This is going to be a hang on to your hats, for this is going to be a fascinating answer. You're going to get into some budget detail that everybody I know came to hear. This is going to be great. No, that is the difference between what's called governmental accounting and what's called GAAP accounting. And by law, we have to keep some things under governmental accounting and other things on GAAP accounting. And so all the entire budget is in there. It's just that there are some lines that are in our governmental, which is just actually just the health and hospital portion. And then Wishard, again, this is by governmental accounting, is actually what's in there called the enterprise fund. And that's on a separate, so it's all in there. It's just, in fact, Daniel Lee has spent hours and hours to his unfortunate boredom going over all this stuff. And so it's not off books. It's just, it's the peculiarities of governmental accounting. Did I make that fascinating? Did you all like that? That was pretty nice, wasn't it?
Thank you very much. Let's give Mr. Gutwein an applause.
Stay up here for just a second. Thank you very much for your
presentation. Thank you very much. We certainly appreciate you being here. As you know, eradicating polio is a major initiative of the Rotary Club around the world. And as a thank you for your presence here today,